Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
From the Illinois Farm Economics Summits in Peoria, I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vague. She's from Stuart Peterson right here in Champaign County. And we'll also take a look at farm income and revenue in the coming year with Gary Schnitke and detail some of the things producers can do in the future to make sure that when their income drops from, on average, $100,000 net last year to $20,000 or $30,000 net in this year. You heard those numbers right, that they can stay in business, and we'll do all that during this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Oh, and we'll talk about the weather forecast, too, as we close out our half hour together with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, no update at the commodity markets on this Wednesday afternoon, simply because I'm on the Illinois Farm Economics Summits, and at this hour, traveling from Peoria to Springfield with the Agricultural Economist. Of course, you can always go online and catch those numbers, and we bring them to you throughout the day. The summits, by the way, are entering the second half of the week, and we'll be in Springfield tomorrow. That starts at 7:45 a.m. for the registration and 8:15 for the kickoff of the meeting. Finishes up during the noon hour with our lunch. If you'd like to come, you can do that each and every day of the week, by the way. The cost is just $75. So find us in Springfield at the Crown Plaza tomorrow. And then, of course, we'll be in Mount Vernon on Friday at the Holiday Inn. I'll try to make sure that we get Commodity Week recorded along the way as well, and we'll put that up on the website. Working from the Illinois Farm Economic Summits makes for an interesting week. Thank you so much for being along with me and being patient as we make our way through this process. Next week and the following week, I'm going to take a couple of weeks off. I have some really great things planned for you, already put in the can for the Closing Market Report. There will be some updates during the week at the 8:50 a.m. time, but not at the 9:50 a.m. time on our home radio station. However, Commodity Week and the Closing Market Report will air as usual.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this evening. Partly cloudy skies, a low of 30 degrees. West winds at 10 to 14. They'll gust to 21. And then tomorrow, partly sunny. A high of just 38 degrees and a west-northwest wind at 9 to 11. Thursday evening, mostly cloudy, a low of 23. West winds then as well, 10 miles an hour. And then on Friday, partly sunny skies, a high of 33 degrees. West winds at 11 to 18. That'll make it feel pretty nippy out there. They could gust all the way to 25 on Friday. Friday night, mostly clear, will drop into the teens. A low of 19 degrees. Saturday, sunny, and we'll go to 36 degrees. Saturday night, mostly clear, with a low of 29. And on Sunday, mostly sunny skies. We'll be back up to 50 degrees by the time we get to Sunday. And Sunday night, a chance of rainfall. It'll be cloudy on Sunday evening, a low of 40. And on the start of the work week, Monday, partly sunny, a high of 49 degrees. Monday night, cloudy and 36. And on Tuesday of next week, a chance of rain, mostly cloudy, a high near 52 degrees. That's a look at the weather forecast. You're listening, of course, to Illinois Public Media. This is the Closing Market Report. We are a production of the University of Illinois.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com. Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on a Wednesday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're joined now by Jackie Fakes. She's at Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County to take a look at the marketplace. Hey, happy holidays to you. I'm really looking forward to taking some time off over the next couple of weeks, Jackie. So this will be the last time we get to talk for about 2 weeks, and I wanted to extend my best wishes to you and Jeff, and of course to all the folks that you talk to on the air as well. Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, and same to you, Todd, you and Clarianne and all the kids and all of our listeners, of course. You know, we hope that everyone has a wonderful time together with their families and have safe trips, because there are an awful lot of people that travel at this particular time of the year. And so makes it more challenging, especially if we end up with any kind of snow. I mean, they keep saying that we're going to get a big snow year, so I guess we'll see what happens.
Indeed we will. Let's talk a little bit about the marketplace. You sent me a list. I think we'll start with that. On the top of your list was some items that we have not yet talked about as it relates to Argentina. What'd you find?
Well, I think it's interesting. You know, we've got this whole thing going on in Argentina, you know, and one of the big things that we know that China struggles with is trying to get people to come in and actually invest in their country. Now, we're seeing this big change going on because of Macri being in, you know, elected and talking about changing the currency ratios and doing everything else. And now suddenly we have YPF, which is the largest oil company in Argentina, and Dow Chemical looking at going together and investing somewhere between $400 and $600 million in Argentina shale development in 2016. I, you know, now you can take that one of two ways. Do we really need a lot more oil on the market? That's another question. I mean, you know, we know what happened here in the U.S. when it came to shale production. But I just thought it was a really interesting point that what a difference it can make just to have a change in the regime and in the attitude and in the currency situation, because we know that China continues to struggle. I mean, they're doing everything they can possible to get themselves into a position so that they can get into the International Monetary Fund and become a currency that has some validation, and in other words, gives investors some confidence to be able to do something. So this I think is a good thing. Now, from an oil standpoint, you know, boy, it looks as if, you know, Russia is going to have some hard times, because Russia, you know, has some major state oil refineries. And, you know, now the Russian people with the lower oil prices should really be benefiting. You know, it should be a good thing. But Russia says, oh, well, you know, we're not going to interfere. But it appears as if they are interfering, and the money's going to big oil. And the consumer's going to be shorthanded again. So, you know, it's going to be harder for Russia to become more efficient if we see more and more oil put on the marketplace. And, you know, the fact that the U.S. Congress is looking to lift that 40-year ban on oil exports certainly doesn't help anything. But just to digress a little bit, China and Russia are now looking to ink a deal on wheat. You know, they never were really, you know, they never really got along really great. But right now, China and Turkey, which was its number one wheat buyer, are in a bit of a frosty situation. In other words, they're not getting along really well. So the very interesting how sometimes adversity makes for opportunity, and I think that's what we have to look at from our perspective. Even if things look adverse at times, it could lead to great opportunity as we go down the road.
Come back to something a little closer to home. Tell me a little bit about NOPA. They track, along with USDA, again now since they've reinstituted this, crush in the United States.
Right. Yeah, you know, the NOPA crush yesterday was disappointing. Came in at 156.1 versus 161.1. You know, and you know, I think that is a good reflection of the fact that we just don't have the oil or the meal demand that we did have, and yet I would expect that if oil demand does pick up the way they expect it to, we'll probably start to see this get to be a better number. The only problem we'll have then, of course, is we'll have a larger meal stockpile. And so we have to figure out a way to be able to move meal. And, you know, maybe if meal actually does move down a bit in price, you know, I did nutrition consulting for 16 years. Meal is still a great, great product to put into a ration. And so, you know, from that perspective, maybe it'll pencil better into a ration as we go along here. So, you just can't tell until we get a little further down the road.
Right. So we may have a whole lot of meal on the marketplace, especially as the biodiesel RFS begins to ramp up this year and next year. U.S. EPA saying they're going to go ahead with that. And there may be a lot more meal on the marketplace. However, we'll be needing a whole lot more bean oil to serve as a biofuel. It'll be interesting to see how that works out and what it means to the price of soybeans. Speaking of the agricultural markets, USDA had released a quick preview of what they're going to be doing in their outlook form for 2016. Did it show a pickup in the marketplace for agriculture anytime soon?
Well, you know, if you want to take it from a J.P. Morgan standpoint, which, you know, J.P. Morgan's been wrong so many times, they consider ag to look dismal until we pick up in 2018. And, you know, I can't totally disagree with them. I think it's going to take until 2018 for us to work through some of the stockpiles we have. Now, that could change if El Nino comes along. You know, we could definitely see some differences there. But I do think we have to expect that it's going to take time to get ourselves back in line again after how far out of line we were in 2012. I mean, it just doesn't happen. And then you have other things going on in the background, too. You know, you know, we keep talking about what was the statement that they made, Todd, during the recession? Too big to fail. That was too big to fail, right?
Right.
Well, now we've got the NFO opposing this Dow Chemical and DuPont Chemical merger. You know, they're each worth $60 billion apiece, and they want to get together. You know, so you wonder sometimes, you know, with some of these companies, you know, what is going on here? Why are we getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and less competitive all the time? You know, it's just it makes for a difficult situation, I think, in general, as a producer or as an end user, to try and figure out, you know, who do you go to buy to? I mean, there are other people other than Dow and DuPont. You and I talked about that last week. But it's just a situation where you see these things happening. And if you're worth $60 billion, why do you need to merge with somebody else, I guess, is probably the question that I would have to ask myself.
Thank you for taking the time with us today. I really do appreciate it. We look forward to talking with you again in the month of January. I'm going to take a couple of weeks off. And consequently, we won't be talking for a while. Thanks so much.
Yep. Merry Christmas and happy New Year to everybody. And we'll talk to you after then. Thank you.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason on the Illinois Farm Economics Summit. It's in Peoria today. Again, we'll be in Springfield tomorrow and Mount Vernon on Friday. If you would like to come out to the Illinois Farm Economics Summit, so certainly walk-ins are welcome. The cost is $75 at the door. We open up registration at 7:45 a.m. and begin the program at 8:15. Your cost includes all the materials, plus a refreshment in the morning, refreshments at the break, and a lunch. In fact, we finish up at lunch, so you'll have plenty of time to get on to the rest of the things, maybe some Christmas shopping or other items that you need to do for the day. Again, we'll be in Springfield at the Crown Plaza, that is on Thursday, tomorrow, and at the Holiday Inn in Mount Vernon on Friday. One of the speakers on our event is Gary Schnitke. He is an agricultural economist at the U of I, taking up a subject that we talk to him about often on our radio programs. That's cost and crop budgets and revenues and income. The bottom line, I suppose, for this year, for 2016, that is. You know, is that farmers aren't going to make much money, and in fact, they may lose money.
Yeah, that's correct. Income-wise, we're looking at a low-income year. On average, we're projecting something like $20,000 to $30,000 per farm for a grain farm in Illinois, and that's down from $100,000 last year. And the primary reasons for that are lower corn yields, lower soybean prices, and no marketing gains. So we're looking at a lower income year in 2015 than in 2014.
So let's establish a couple of things. Are they coming into these heavy years, I'll just call them heavy years, in better shape than they have in the past? And what does that really mean as they look forward to cost cuttings and kinds of things that they can do or maybe won't want to do?
Yeah, so what we're seeing is farmers in very strong financial position on average. So, you know, there are some that aren't. But most farmers are in pretty strong financial positions, so they can weather these low-income years and simply erode the working capital position of their farm. So we are strong, but there still is a need to cut costs because it's likely that we're in a lower price regime for quite a while. So if we're in this lower price regime, we got to get cost fitting into that lower price and lower revenues. If we don't, we'll just keep eroding working capital until it's gone.
And that's when we'll have a real problem. So right now they've come out of some really boom years where they've made really good money, better money than they have over their careers, over their lifetimes. And they're settling back to some areas. And this is typical in the farm economy that you have really good years and really lean years. Most, I don't think, will understand that you can run from $100,000 in. This is gross, or
this is net income. So we have $100,000. We averaged $100,000 of net income last year, and we're predicting $20,000 to $30,000 for this year. And again, you know, yeah, that's the commodity price market. Just look at it from this perspective: 2010, 2011, and 2012, we were running $5 to $6 corn price. So just for easy math, say you had $5 corn, 200 bushels, that's $1,000. Now we're looking at below $4 corn price, but just quick math, 4 times 200 is 800. So we've lost $200 of revenue, and actually more than that. We're probably grossing somewhere on a corn acre of $750 an acre compared to something over $1,000 two, 3 years ago. So $300 less revenue.
Then producers have to begin to cut, you believe. They should not just use their working capital, that which they have built up to maintain things, thinking, hey, I'll get through this year and things will get better, because it appears that we'll have lower prices for a longer period of time. They're going to want to know, what do I cut? I know you're suggesting that they start with cash rents, if possible. And in some cases, you suggest they may look at giving up a farm.
Yeah, so we, if you look at where average cost and average cash rents are now, so cash rents vary a lot, but at an average level, you have to look at something like $100 of cost cuts, and that's going to have to come from non-land, and, you know, it has to come from fertilizer, seed, machinery depreciation, and chemicals, because those are the big cost. If it doesn't come from there, we're not going to get it down, and cash rents. So the thing that I would suggest, particularly for farmers, is to look and see if you don't want to particularly cut cash rent and hold it for hopefully higher price years in the future, that you do the budget before 50 corn and 1050 soybeans. And if you don't make money at that level, then you probably need to do something, because we're long run prices optimistically are at those levels. So if you're not making money at those levels, it's hard to foresee you making money anytime. So that's sort of the benchmark. But even given that, you know, we do need to get those costs in line, and simply eroding that working capital doesn't impress me as being a prudent strategy.
How do you do it then? Because there are things that they probably can't control a lot. Price of fertilizer, price of fuel should be down. That's a big input. Price of seed?
So if we're looking at non-line cost, machinery depreciation will come down if you purchase less capital. So have to cut machinery purchases back to something below $30 an acre, back to the sort of the levels we were at pre-2006. Fertilizer, we may see some relief because of lower prices, but you really have to look at P&K, see if we can, if we need to apply as much as we are, and nitrogen as well. Seed's a sticky one. Maybe looking at lower technology seed, saving some money on the technology, but not the key there is not sacrificing too much on the yield side. So it is hard to think about a lot of those costs coming down, but you got to do have to think about machinery, really dialing in the fertilizer, pesticides, reducing optional, and maybe doing more crop scouting. So all of those things need to be considered. Again, we do need to see $100 cost from cuts from some source.
In general, are farms overpowered? Could they get rid of machinery?
Well, we could. Getting rid of machinery, maybe not so much as not purchasing as much. We saw quite a bit of machinery purchases in 2010 through 2012, 2013. That probably has given us a resort on most farms where they can not purchase machinery for a while. That's probably a wise thing to do because we've got to get those capital costs lower.
Is there anything in the FBFM records when you aggregate them, and I don't know whether you can see this, that shows a difference from farm to farm in terms of category, for instance, conventional tillage versus no-till or something along those lines?
Yeah, we haven't looked at that recently about whether no-tillers have lower, lower cost, and we need to look at that again. The big thing, though, is if you're going to no-till and you want to save on cost, you got to get rid of the big equipment, which the optional stuff is the larger tractors and some of the tillage equipment. Because if you don't get rid of the equipment, the overhead costs are still there. So you have to reduce machinery inventory to get the cost savings associated with no-till.
Other primary costs that they can take a look at that would help them structure themselves better for these coming years?
So we got to look at those five main costs. I would suggest not cutting back on crop insurance, probably still thinking about 85% coverage levels because we still do have price and yield variability out there. There will be some relief on the fuel side, but $10 an acre. And on the other side, interest rates may be rising a little bit, so debt costs probably are rising. So, keeping the thing that we've always seen is that those profitable farms are the ones that keep cost control in line, and machinery costs are a big part of that. So really looking at the machinery cost side is key.
Gary Schnittke is an agricultural economist traveling on the Illinois Farm Economic Summits this week. We're in Peoria today. Tomorrow we'll be in Springfield and in Mount Vernon on Friday. You can find all the details on the Farm Doc Daily website. Walk-ins are still welcome. We start at 7:45 a.m. and the cost is $75. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, back in 2 minutes with the agricultural weather forecast.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
It's National Chocolate Covered Anything Day. It's also Eat What You Want Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1773, American colonists revolted against the British government. Dressing up as Native Americans and armed with small hatchets and clubs, they boarded the Dartmouth and Beaver and Eleanor. From the ship holds, they dumped over 90,000 pounds of tea overboard, an event that would become to be known as the Boston Tea Party. Tea washed up on the shores around Boston for weeks. In 1833, Seaman Ashel Knapp was born. An American agriculturalist, He began the system, which evolved into the U.S. Cooperative Extension Service. He introduced improved methods of farming into Louisiana, spurred the development of rice culture in the Southwest, demonstrated methods for curbing the boll weevil in Texas, and inaugurated a federal program of farm demonstrations throughout the South. Knapp's legacy was to bring progressive agricultural methods to the American farmer. In 1863, Gerald Heineken purchased the Amsterdam brewery, the Haystack, which dated back to 1592. This was the beginning of Heineken beer. In 1884, William Fruin of Minneapolis, Minnesota, patented an automatic liquid vending machine. And in 1990, Harlan Sanders died at Shelbyville, Kentucky. He is best known as the founder of Kentucky Fried Chicken. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated. It appears we're going to get a little cooler, but we're going to warm back up. Can you tell me about the coming week?
Yes, and I should point out, too, it's not perfect everywhere. There is a little band of showers moving through eastern Illinois and western Indiana at this hour, so I know that not everybody's enjoying the sunshine that some of us are. Anyway, this frontal boundary is going to continue moving eastward across the Midwest over the next day or two, and then we'll be in that cooler air that you mentioned. And I think for the day on Thursday as well as Friday, maybe Saturday morning, we will stay in the cool air mass. And it'll feel very cold just because we haven't been cold very much this season. But in reality, the temperature is going to be fairly close to normal. It's just, after all that warmth, it's not going to feel very comfortable. But the cold is going to abate fairly quickly. We'll go right back into some warmer bias conditions. The week of Christmas is probably going to turn just a little bit ugly as we get closer to the holiday. Probably looking at a couple of storm systems that will be moving across the heart of the Midwest that will perhaps get in the way of a little bit of travel. Most of this is rain, though. It will be warm enough across the region that it probably won't be a snow or an ice situation. The exception to that would be probably in a few areas in the upper Midwest, from Iowa and parts of Nebraska into Wisconsin and Minnesota. Those areas will probably end up with some snow and ice to deal with just before the holiday.
And our last opportunity to check in with you, at least in the afternoon, for an update of the weather in South America.
And it does look as though that most everything down there is still pretty good. There's a lot of chatter out there about it being too dry in parts of Brazil, and indeed it is too dry in the northeast corner of the country. Some of the center west crop areas have been just a little bit on the dry side here recently and are firming up, but it looks to me like timely rain will come around just before we start stressing the crop enough to hurt the production potential. So I think we're still going to be looking at a fairly large crop there, but it is somewhat tenuous right now, and it'll be important for us to stay focused on the rain distribution over the next couple of weeks. In Argentina and southern Brazil, it's plenty wet. In fact, some would complain it's too wet in southern Brazil, and we do need to see a little bit of a drier bias down that way. I think the pattern is going to be locked in, though, through the balance of December in both these countries, and it'll be sometime in January that we'll look for some kind of a break in the overall biases.
And finally, we had talked a lot last year and again at the beginning this year about the late beginning to their season, meaning the rains didn't come early on. How late were they really this year compared to last year? And last year we thought there might be some impact on the safrinha crops. Is there a concern about that in this year as well?
I think there is. We are, in some cases, a month behind in some areas in Mato Grosso. I understand, some areas up there in Mato Grosso were late planting the first time, and then the crop ran out of moisture, and they actually replanted a small portion of it. I think about 3 or 4% of the crop was replanted, and that crop will be way too late for a second season corn or cotton crop to come in behind it. But in general, relative to last year, it's somewhat similar, but I think we are going to see a slight increase in the amount of unplanted second season corn that occurs because we are just a little bit later than we were last year. But the bottom line, for this first crop of soybeans and corn, the yields will be high as long as we can stay away from a little bit of excessive stress from dryness. And it looks to me like they will have some pretty good yields. So it will be a smaller second crop, but the first crops are going to be huge.
Thanks so much for taking the time with us today, Drew.
You bet, and have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And that wraps up this edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.